As some of you know, we had a visitor earlier today who was in need of a Good Samaritan. And a Good Samaritan volunteered. John Neese took our guest, who was obviously down on his luck, for a bit of breakfast. And I'm mentioning it partly to let those of you who were worried about John know that the Good Samaritan has returned and is all right. It's such a simple word, you'd never think of looking it up in an unabridged dictionary. But I did it for this sermon. A five-letter noun for the painful feeling that comes to certain people, most people, I hope, when they do something dishonorable or improper or ridiculous. If you haven't guessed it already, here are some samples of usage. She was overcome with shame. His cowardice shamed him. What a thing to say to your mother. You should feel ashamed. When that dictionary was put together, two things were clear. Shame was an emotion both painful and potentially redeeming, and there were plenty of times when it ought to be felt. The question is, how well does the dictionary definition fit life in the 90s? I get the feeling sometimes that there is a conspiracy in the land against feeling ashamed. Sigmund Freud did us a great favor by pointing out that some of our shame and guilt are misplaced. Sexual prudery and puritanical repression saddled many people with guilt who should not have felt it. But it's a human trait to toss out the baby with the bathwater, and it may be time to remind ourselves that a sense of shame can be a blessing. That sometimes shame is the psychological equivalent of pain in the body. It alerts us to trouble. At least it does if we have a conscience. Shame is the inevitable reaction of a conscience that has been violated. If there is a moral order in life as well as a physical one, then every moral action has consequences as inevitable as those in the world of quantum physics. We may try, in a kind of pseudo-sophistication, to laugh them off. We may decide the violation of conscience is worth it for the money or the power or the pleasure we get. But if we have a lively conscience, deep down, as far below the conscience mind as we can push it, a sense of shame gnaws at our vitals and has to be dealt with. Because we know whether we truly love someone or whether we're only using him or her. We know whether our fib is a last resort to save someone else, or only a rather shabby lie to save ourselves. The great London preacher Leslie Weatherhead tells about a criminal who once told him that although he got away with his crime and was intellectually positive that he would never be discovered, The burden of shame was so intolerable that he walked into Scotland Yard and gave himself up. His arrest released the tension of his guilt, and he said he felt happier than he had felt in months, even though he knew he would be severely punished. Guilt can exact a fearful price from us unless we resolve it. Now, I'm not talking about psychotic guilt in which people berate themselves over nothing or over something they could not possibly have helped. That's a medical problem. But the shame you feel when you betray your own best self is a religious problem. Most of the time, when we feel guilty, the chances are that we have been guilty, and what we need to get rid of is not just the feeling, but the guilt. That, however, may require some changes we are not willing to make. You and I have often felt just enough embarrassment to make us ashamed of something, but not quite enough of it to make us do anything. I'm sure that's why a certain psychotherapist gave what seems, at first hearing, such peculiar advice to a patient. The woman was going on and on about so many sleazy things in her life that it seemed obvious she had a pattern of behavior she wasn't really about to change. But she wanted to try to make herself feel better about it by talk. She said, "I feel awful." The therapist said, "Good. Can you stay with that feeling?" He thought if she could, she might be motivated to change her life. One day, after several hours of listening to people try to unburden themselves of a sense of shame, to excuse themselves and blame someone or something else, a well-known theologian finally responded in frustration, "Listen, people, guilt is not there to destroy us, but to save us. Don't be embarrassed by every feeling of shame. How else would you know you are alive and have a conscience?" He obviously thought that shame could be a blessing, which is what the Apostle Paul felt. Over and over, he reminds himself how cruelly he had persecuted and even murdered Christians in the name of God. He feels forgiven, healthy, but he doesn't want to forget what he did. His shame mobilizes him. It makes him want to extend the same love and mercy to others that had totally changed his life. Not everybody makes that use of shame, or worse yet, perhaps doesn't even know how to feel it. Once, when a particularly corrupt boondoggle had been exposed in the infamous administration of Chicago's Mayor Richard Daley, he was confronted by a young reporter who said, "Aren't you embarrassed by these things, Mayor?" To which the mayor's response was, "Son, nothing embarrasses us." His admirers thought that was heroic. From a Christian point of view, it was a sign of moral sickness. And if that's true, if we ought to be embarrassed sometimes, if we ought to feel shame sometimes, let your mind range for a moment over the moral landscape of our time, and you start to wonder if we may not need to recapture a deeper sense of shame. Freddy Krueger, oh well, the kids love it. The tailhook scandal, Oh, well, boys will be boys. I'll do whatever it takes to get elected. Oh, well, that's just good politics. Do you still remember, and I hope I do correctly, Mary Jo Kopechne, who drowned when the car she was in with Ted Kennedy plunged off a bridge and into the cold waters of Chappaquiddick? Her family, I can promise you, still remembers. So can you imagine a talk show host who would distribute a little toy that gurgles with a sound like air bubbles coming up through the water? And call that sound, for the delight of his listeners, the last moments of Mary Jo Kopechne. And it strikes his admirers as funny. We could use a little shame. How incredible it is to me that a sizable number of people have made a cult hero out of Howard Stern, the Shockmeister, we have a name for everything, who spews out the most foul-mouthed, hate-filled, sexist garbage you have ever imagined in your worst nightmare, and makes money from thousands who find it entertaining. Shame on us. Cher is not one of my personal heroines, but I was glad last week when she called Howard Stern a creep. What malaise do we have that turns a guy like that into a celebrity? And do you suppose he ever feels ashamed of the filth he dumps on anybody who happens to tune in? Somehow I doubt it. As a child of the times, he has probably worked out a rationalization. This one, no doubt. Hey, I don't hold a gun to anybody's head to make them listen. If there's a problem, it's their problem. Michael Brennan, a recovering drug addict turned writer, pointed out this tendency in an essay in Newsweek recently. He recalls being at a group therapy session, and hearing one woman make a kind of long, sighing confession to her support group. She said, "My name is Jane, and it's hard enough being an alcoholic, but to be a codependent, adult child, radical feminist lesbian, trying to gain tenure at a patriarchal institution like Harvard, well..." Brennan's reaction went like this. "Her obsession with the labels struck me as more neurotic than whatever those labels signified. It isn't fashionable to confess to personal responsibility for some significant percentage of our misery. We've grown marvelously adept at introspection and personal analysis, but very, very hesitant to blame ourselves for much. We acknowledge our difficulty, but we point the finger at someone else." Did you read that, to me, wonderful essay in yesterday's paper by a man I think must have been black, saying to his fellow blacks, "A lot of our problem is our fault"? That took courage. It isn't new, this scapegoating. Adam, of course, blamed Eve and then God for giving him Eve, and Eve blamed the serpent, and I suppose the good old talking snake would have blamed somebody too, except there wasn't anyone else left. It's so typical to handle our shame and humiliation by blaming somebody else that we're always surprised when some rare soul steps up and says, "I goofed, folks. It was nobody's fault but mine." And the truth is that not many people do that, except for the most trivial mistakes. A biography of Frederick the Great tells about how that monarch once visited a prison in Potsdam. One prisoner after another emphatically assured him that he was innocent, the victim of a frame-up. Finally, one man looked down at the floor and said, "Your Majesty, I am guilty, and I richly deserve my punishment." The king's eyes widened in amazement, and he yelled for the warden to come at once. "Free this rascal," he said, "and get him out of prison before he corrupts all the noble, innocent people in here." I have to think that that one prisoner was at least healthier than the others who had to lie to themselves constantly to support their protestations of innocence. Kierkegaard must have had that kind of thing in mind when he said, "It is not gain, you're not gaining anything, it is not gain that guilt should be wholly forgotten. Shame, in other words, can be the prelude to a blessing if we make the right response." A man who deals with hundreds of people in counseling sessions made the remark recently that half the misery, uncertainty, and weakness I come across arises from shame we do nothing about. We need release. There is greatness in this country still, but we can use a healthy dose of shame for what is not great. Surely no one who travels, reads, looks around, compares today with yesterday can doubt that we have wantonly wasted and abused our environment. Shame on us. A fearful epidemic rages in our cities, an epidemic of violence. Children shoot one another to get a pair of sneakers, or just at random, senselessly for a thrill. A 15-year-old boy, angry because his mother won't let him borrow the car, shoots her in the back of the head while she's taking the cookies out of the oven, and then calmly takes the car keys and leaves. We have created a society in which violence is so entertaining that it should come as no surprise when a guy who thinks he is Jesus Christ in Waco, Texas, sees no irony in stocking an arsenal of weapons to be used just in case. Whose fault is it that we are such a violent society? We can point as many fingers as we have at guilty parties, but one of them has to be bent back at ourselves. Think about what you read and watch and hear and support with your money or silence. Everything that goes wrong, when it goes wrong, is now someone else's fault. It's the fault of Congress, of the schools, or the cops, or the courts. It's the fault of the secular humanists, the feminists, the gays, the unions, the trial lawyers, the cultural elite, the television sitcom stars. The list goes on and on, but much of what is wrong with the world is not just the fault of somebody else, but our fault for not caring enough and for not caring persistently enough. Shame on us. And lest you leave this place thinking that all you can do now is feel guilty, please remember Kierkegaard and Paul and the others I have quoted. Shame is not there to destroy us. It's there to save us. Jeremiah said centuries ago, are they ashamed of their loathsome conduct? No, they have no shame at all. They do not even know how to blush. I think it's time we started blushing again. In fact, I think it's time we stop apologizing for being embarrassed. Embarrassment, a famous essay says, is a response, and this is pretty tightly woven, but the guy says in the essay that it's a response to the discovery that in living we either replenish or frustrate a wondrous expectation. It involves an awareness of the grandeur of existence that may be wasted, of unique moments missed. It's a protection against the outbursts of inner evils, against arrogance, self-deification. The end of embarrassment, he says, would be the end of humanity. On that note, I leave you with what I regard as a blessing, odd as it may sound. Shame on us.